Destination Freedom. Destination Freedom. Dramatizations of the great democratic traditions of the Negro people is brought to you by station WMAQ as a part of the pageant of history and of America's own Destination Freedom. Of an American woman, the late H.G. Wells once said, "Turn the pages of this plucky woman's story of the broadening streak of violence and injustice through which she has lived her life in her own country, and I wonder what answer will America give to her." The woman was Mary Church Terrell, and in a chapter entitled "The Long Road," Destination Freedom turns the pages of the Terrell story.
I am the woman, Mary Church Terrell. The pages of my story began at the close of the Civil War. On the threshold of that new age, I was born. Born in Memphis, Tennessee. Unheralded, unwanted.
It's a girl. At a time like this, the Almighty sends us a girl. It's neither the time nor the place to raise one.
No, no, it's not the time for any child. I wanted none.
Well, boy, he'd have a chance. But in this section of the South, where they're struggling to throw us back into slavery, a girl.
Oh, I wanted no children at all. None at all.
So, I was welcomed. And in the wreckage of the Reconstruction, I grew and quietly wondered at the split personality of the social system that spawned me, that preached one way of living for white folks and demanded a different way from black folks. And I asked my mother why I was unwelcome.
Must you keep asking me that?
I'd like to know.
You'll get to see for yourself soon enough. You'll know.
But how will I know?
When you don't have to ask, you'll know. Now go on out to get your schooling. Your father and I have work to do.
So I would go out to school and to play and to wander across the street where a boy I knew, Tom Moss, also wandered, and who would call to me.
Oh, Mary. Hey, want a piece of apple? Go on, take a hand.
Well,
go on, bite. You got a small mouth. Hey, that's a nice bite. Hey, your mouth ain't as small as I thought it was.
Well, I did the best I could.
And your best is plenty good. Hey, you going my way? Come on.
You walking down Cottonwood Street? You're not supposed to.
It's for white folks only, the sign says. Hey, but I hear your old man's going to buy a house on it.
But my mother says we're not...
She won't stop him, because he's right. I'm going to be like him one day. Ain't going to be no streets where I can't walk when I get bigger. Hey, Mary... You ever read the 13th and 14th Amendments?
Yes.
You know, our folks used to be slaves. But all that stuff's ended. It's dead. Ain't no more slavery, so them white signs don't mean a thing. The Constitution says everybody's free and equal, and I intend to stick by it like a gun.
And Tom and I, children of newly freed slaves, would wonder at the world around us. And already there was a militant man in his outlook that I longed to have. And when I asked him how he got that way, he said,
I'm a man. I'm supposed to fight for what's my own, your pa said.
And just what am I supposed to be doing?
Well, you're a woman. You're supposed to just sort of keep out of the way, your pa said.
It was true. My father had said this. And one evening, when I came home, he took me over to our new house on the corner of Forbidden Cottonwood Street. I stood with my mouth open.
All right now, girl, stand aside. Least a woman can do is keep out of the way of those who are busy. Let the moving men by. Wagner!
They're coming, Church. Yeah, we're coming.
Well, this way. Stand aside, girl. You hear me?
Here, boy.
All right.
Hold it a while. Easy now. Easy
now.
There.
Don't see the sun setting. Don't stop now. Get my furniture in.
Well, I see the sun setting, Church, but... Do you see what else I see? Way down the end of Cottonwood?
I got eyes.
Well, it's a mob. They've been collecting like buzzards since I heard you were moving on the street.
I know that.
Well, then you know that all they're waiting for is nightfall. My advice, Mr. Church, is take your wife and daughter away.
I hired you to move me, Mr. Wagner.
Well, that's what we're doing.
When I need advice, I'll ask for it.
Church, if you had someone here to help you fight off the mob if they attack you, it'd be different. All you got is two women. Now, I'll tell my boys to take the furniture back.
You... Hey, boys.
Yeah.
Mr. Wagner, I've paid you. You go on.
If you insist on it.
I do.
But you're a fool, John Church. A fool in his life soon parted. All right, boys. Heave on that furniture.
Now, stand aside, girl.
I stood aside as the movers piled furniture into our house on the forbidden street. That night, my father kept a restless watch. And outside, a mob, intent on preserving white supremacy, milled about and shouted. And through the night, as our vigil wore on, my father called.
Mary?
Yes?
Not you, your mother. Mary!
What is it?
They're still waiting out there.
Well, let them wait.
They won't go away until they are driven away.
Oh, but the police, they are...
The police won't help us, you know it. If we stay cooped up, they'll swarm around until one gets enough nerve to shoot through the windows. Then they'll come in at us like hungry dogs.
Oh, John, why did we ever move here?
Because our fathers long for this freedom, even more than we have. And by George, no one is going to drive us out.
Well, what are we going to do?
I'm going to meet them.
Oh, John.
It's better to go outside and convince them than wait and let them take us. My gun, Mary.
Oh, convince them of what?
That slavery is over. My gun. Good. Now step aside, girl.
I stepped aside. And though my mother snatched at him, the ex-slave went out to convince his ex-masters that he indeed was free. And we huddled in the house and heard shots in the street, heard the uproar and the rioting, and listened as it died out. And when the overdue dawn drove the night off, there was a knock on the door. I went to see if Father had won his house or lost it.
I'll go, girl. You stay here.
All right, Mother.
She tiptoed to the door and opened it. It was Father. He came walking in. No, three men, the movers, were helping him walk. They brought him past me, and then I saw the back of his head and cried out,
Father, you're hurt!
Mary!
Yes, John.
Didn't I tell you to keep the girl out of sight?
Oh, I did, but...
Well, why do you stop and stare, too? Wagner.
There.
Take me up. My head.
Oh, John!
No, quiet, ma'am. He's hurt bad, but I think he'll pull through. He drove him off, all right. Just step aside and let us handle it. I think he'll pull through.
And she stepped aside and took me with her and told me why she'd not been anxious for a child.
Now you can see. Oh, for a short while around here. While the Reconstruction was on, there was a growing freedom, and poor white men and Negroes were coming into their own. But before you were born, a reaction tore down the work of the Reconstruction, the free voting, the equal education, and I could see we were heading towards a new kind of slavery. No mother wants to see her child suffer prejudice and bigotry. Now, you see?
I did see. And I looked closer at the life around me and tried to adjust myself for the task ahead. And finally, when Father had recovered, he said,
You won't have to adjust. You're not to live in it. I've decided to send you somewhere else.
Where?
Somewhere where... Freedom and justice are more than ideas, where men are working at it. I've made arrangements for your education, though I don't know what you'll do with it. I wish you'd been a boy, you could be useful. Well, however, girl that you are, do the best you can. Now we've got work to do. Stand aside, girl.
I stood aside quietly and prepared to go north to school, And Tom came by to say goodbye.
Well, the little mouth girl's leaving Memphis.
Oh, Tom.
I just came over to help you pack your suitcases. Brought you an apple, too. Want a bite?
Well, that's nice of you, Tom.
No. I'm not going to let you bite this time. I think I'll cut it.
My folks say you're not going north. You're staying right here.
I'll be here when you come back.
Wouldn't it be easier for you up north?
Might be. It's rough here for anybody believing in the 13th and 14th Amendments. But I'm staying.
But why?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe because my people are here. Maybe because my folks helped build this country, make it worth living in. Anyway, I'm sticking south, even if I'm lynched for it. And besides, I've opened up a grocery store up on Market Street. They tell you about that?
I hear on Market Street they're driving out the Negro merchants.
Well, I'm a Negro merchant, and I'm still there. And I'll be there, Mary, when you come back with your education. I'll be there.
I left Tom and all the people I'd grown up with and went north to Oberlin College and studied the history of my country, grew up, got married, and then came home to settle down. I came home to a welcome that was different from that which was greeted by my birth.
Welcome home. Welcome home, Mary.
Yes, we've gotten together a little surprise party for you, Mary. Welcome home.
My eyes were wet and my heart was full.
Oh, now, Mary, don't look so serious. It's welcome home. Why, you've been away from Memphis now 10 years.
Yeah, not many Memphis girls come home from college with 2, 3 degrees. And Mary, look at these gifts. Everybody you ever knew sent you something.
Oh,
look.
They shouldn't. Where's Tom Moss?
Young Tom Moss? He's an up-and-coming market man now, you know.
I'd like to see him.
Well, it's time he got here.
Yes, he said that he wouldn't miss your homecoming.
That's right. In fact, he sent you a gift, right along with the other folks. Oh, yeah, here, I left it in this here crate. Well, help me, Mr. Wagner.
Yeah, you bet, John. You bet.
You helped me move my furniture into my house when you thought it was going to be my coffin. You ought to be able to lift a little crate now.
Sure, John. Here.
I'll just open it. Yeah, I'll see what's in it. Yeah. All right. Nothing but red apples. There's a note.
What does it say?
Note says, wait, don't let your big mouth eat them all, save half for me. I'll be there. See what to tell you. Your homegirl.
And I felt the warmth of the people around me and forgot the years I'd lived in terror and when my father went out to convince his neighbors he was free. And I waited for Tom to come and to again strike his rich, warm note. Instead, his younger brother came running up the steps in panic and fear.
What is it, boy? What is it?
It's Tom! There's a riot over on Market Street! They wrecked Tom's store! Tom's been lynched!
The warmth I thought I felt in the southern air turned thick and humid and unfriendly. And the party turned into a wake. I recall wandering around the streets of Memphis in a state of shock and knocking on the doors of the churches and telling the story to the ministers who prayed over me and hearing some say,
I'm afraid that there's nothing the church can do about such a horrible thing, miss. Nothing we can do but pray.
I am sorry. There's nothing we can do but pray. There's solace in prayer.
The church for Negroes is on the other part of town. However, you have my deepest sympathy.
What do you expect my church to do? We can only pray. We can pray for their souls.
I was bitter and confused. I couldn't see why Memphis churches could not fight lawlessness. Could not feel it was time to crusade for the living equality of all mankind. I had read of lynchings before and had been deeply stirred. But when a woman has been closely associated with the victim from childhood, the anguish is indescribable. And I decided to make my home elsewhere.
I've always said if I had a son instead of a girl, he would be of help in bringing about the kind of justice the world needs. But a woman...
And why not a woman?
Most people would think, well, that fighting is sort of out of place for a woman.
Then, Father, I think hereafter I'll devote my life to being out of place. To convincing most people that only when a woman stands with men and demands full rights for all, is she really in her place.
And I went across the sea to study and learned of the progress women had made in France and Italy. I went to register at a German institution. I was welcomed by Herr Hansen.
Fräulein Church, we are very glad to have you register to study here.
Well, I've heard so much of this school.
Well, you know, at first, we were very worried about your race.
Yes? Why?
Well...
You discriminate against students because of their color?
Oh, no. The color is ridiculous. But, to be frank, we thought you might be Jewish.
If I were?
Well, we would have to reject you, Fräulein. You see, we do not take Jewish women here. Of course, you being new here, you don't understand that.
I do understand. There's nothing new about discrimination.
But of course you are...
In my own country, Herr Hansen, there, too, are many institutions where I can't study because of my color.
But of course, it's very foolish. Any institution would be proud to have such a scholar as you.
Any institution... should be ashamed to discriminate against any woman, Herr Hansen. I don't think I can study here.
Well, why?
I believe that once one accepts discrimination against another, he's preparing the way for his own slavery. I intend to remain free.
I remained free in Europe, and I worked and studied, while I saw other women slowly giving in to race prejudice. And I learned that no women can live free and equal by standing silently by while huge sections of the human race were slandered and made second-class citizens. And when I came home to America, I had my work cut out for me. I was called to Rochester by a woman who said,
"I've heard of your lectures in Germany, Miss Church. And there's a need for the same things here."
Yes?
Yes. Women in this country have gathered under the National American Woman Suffrage Association. We're working for an amendment to the Constitution that'll give women the right to vote. We need women like you to go across the country and speak, inspire other women to follow you. Without this fight, it may take 100 years before women will cast ballots in America.
I've thought of that.
Will you go?
Where shall I start?
Start where the message is needed most.
Well, that's in the South. It's harder to get women to listen there.
I know. We've got to get to white women and Negro women in the South. Get to them and somehow get them together.
I'll get to them.
I took up the fight for women's suffrage and traveled South and spoke days and nights before women gathered in homes and halls. I spoke of the simple desire every woman had for dignity and strength, and the same human recognition for their merit and talent that greeted men, some men. And in the cornfields in Kansas, I talked to women while their men went off to vote at the polls.
How long do you think it'll take, Miss Church, to get an amendment passed?
Well, if enough women from this state join the association and get their men to vote for the amendment first...
Well, how do you get the men to vote for equality? Just the sound of the word makes them mad.
You've got to convince them.
How? My husband says women's place is to raise the children. Nothing else.
He has daughters?
3.
Well, ask him if he wants them to serve in drudgery and subservience and have no rights of their own.
Yeah, nope. Nope, he ain't likely to stand for that if he thinks of his own daughters. Not likely.
And I went south and talked to women in cotton fields as well as women in clubs and hotels. And soon my name became known in towns before I reached them. Sometimes the women welcomed me as I got off the train. Sometimes they came to the train to see that I didn't get off, as they did in Alabama.
Are you that agitating woman they sent down here from up north?
I'm from Memphis, and I came to speak about something that concerns us all.
I knew it. That's her.
Yes, sir.
That's this woman who's going around stirring up trouble.
Yes,
women, please listen to me. I've got to talk to you.
Listen, if you want to know something for your own good, girl, get back on that train and stay, or they'll be throwing you back off.
Yeah, that's right. Who are they?
The men folks around here. It ain't about you coming. Yeah.
And since when have women with backbone allowed men to dictate who they shall hear and who they shan't? Since when?
Well, we don't want no colored women coming down here telling us what to vote for. That's all.
Yeah, that's right. But who knows more about what's in the hearts and minds of women of the South, Negro and white? You or the bigots among men who've never given equal treatment to their Negro neighbors, nor to you, their wives and daughters? And who among you enjoys the freedom that all women need? Who associates with whom she likes? Who can bring up her children to be true fighters for freedom and humanity without telling them to hold back, for their neighbors are Jews or Negroes?
We know all that you're talking about. We expected you to talk that way. Agitator.
Are you afraid to listen to an agitator?
Now listen, my man's a member of the Ku Klux Klan, and he's got some power in this town, and you
can see why you're afraid. He must be a very frightened and brutal man.
He treats me all right. He's just hard on the colored and the men.
There's no man who practices brutality towards other men who will ever practice equality with women.
You get out of town.
We don't want no equality with Negroes. That's all there is to it.
Right.
My man says the Klan's the only thing that's protecting us white women from Negro men. He says that!
Women, since when have we needed cowards in bedsheets and masks and shotguns to safeguard our persons and our homes? The only protecting women need is protection by equality under the law. Equality of opportunities and the right to share the benefits of this land alongside men. Equality to choose their associates without fear of intimidation from bigots and the hissing of cowards. That's why I'm staying in the South and getting Negro and white women together to find their freedom together. In the right to vote and the right to work, will freedom be found? For once a white woman bows down before white masculinism, she is ready for slavery.
And I spoke that way whenever I traveled. And slowly they began to listen. And there were women's clubs formed of women in the South to promote their own welfare. I helped form a national association of colored women when the crucial 19th Amendment to grant suffrage to women was passed. I worked for women's organizations everywhere to implement the amendment and to bring a new awareness of the struggles women were making to help construct a new society where race and sex discrimination would be outlawed. And when I had finished this mission, I was invited to another.
Miss Church, I've called you here because we are proud of your work in women's suffrage and your work with the Washington Board of Education. There's another mission I wish you could join.
What is it?
Well, you've enlisted women behind political rights and social rights. The world wars ended in Europe. Now there's another thing we've got to get women behind.
Peace?
Yes. Without peace, none of the rights we won for women will mean anything. Will you help?
You know I will.
I'm glad. I'm going with you. I'm going on leave of absence from Hull House here in Chicago to help build the peace.
She was Jane Addams. And together with 30 other women, we went to Switzerland and there worked with women from every country in Europe to outline a program to put women, who give most and gain least by wars, squarely behind the crusade for peace. And on my way home, I stopped in England and met a man who'd already read the early pages of my life and said...
My dear Miss Church, whenever you write your autobiography, call on me if you need a godfather for it. For if you live the next 20 years of your life the way you've lived the last 20, it will be a book all America should read.
And I came home to Washington, where I decided to live. And again I was called to undertake a mission. The call came from the head of the Washington Education Association.
Would you have time this year, Miss Church, to make a study of George Washington's relation to the Negro people? My department wants to print a pamphlet for the coming Washington Bicentennial. If you have time, I know you're very busy.
I found the time, and I began by boarding the bus in Washington to go out to the George Washington's home at Mount Vernon. But it seems I had forgot that here in our nation's capital I wasn't free.
Fare, please. Step back in the bus. Move back in the bus, please. Hey, woman. Hey, you hear me, woman? You deaf or something? If you're deaf, woman, you sure ain't blind. Can't you hear me?
What is it, kid?
You're sitting in the wrong seat. White folks in the front, colored in the rear.
You been in Washington a long time?
A very long time.
Then act like it. Are you moving? Or are you giving me a little trouble?
I'm too tired to move. I guess I'm going to give you trouble.
All right, then, woman, you asked for it. All right, hold that door open there. Now, come along, come along. Out you go!
I pulled myself up off the Capitol streets and walked slowly toward the home of George Washington. I was going to make my survey on the relations of the Negro people, not only with the first president, but with the capital of the country. I would not step aside. True, I was an old woman, but there were still fights for women to lead. There were still the fights for justice and equality and peace. I looked toward Mount Vernon. It was at the end of a long, long road. But I still had strength to travel it.
You have just heard Destination Freedom's dramatization of The Long Road, the story of the militant fighter for women's rights, Mary Church Terrell. Destination Freedom is written by Richard Durham and produced by Homer Heck. Dick Loughran directed. The role of Mary Church Terrell was played by Weslin Tilden and Janice Kingslow. Others in the cast were Oscar Brown, Jr., Dorothy Tate, Alma Platz, Fred Pinkard, and Dean Almquist. Special music was composed by Emil Soderstrom and played by Elwin Owen and Jose Bethencourt. Sound effects by Cliff Mueller. This is Charles Chan inviting you to be with us again next week when Destination Freedom will present the first chapter of the Henri Christophe story, The Liberator of Haiti. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.